Good morning. We will call this committee to order for April 28th and note for the record that there is a quorum present. First order of business is approval of the minutes for Thursday, April 23rd. Vice Chair Hollins, would you care to move the minutes? Any discussion to the minutes? I'm hearing they are flawless. Representative Niska.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
State your point of order.
It appears from the minutes that Representative Hollins was not present.
Oh, no. I didn't look. Co-Chair Niska, would you care to move the minutes?
No.
Would you anyway?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Next order of business is the calendar for the day for Thursday, April 30th. We are proposing House File 3426, Jordan, House File 4151, Witte, House File 4063, Ream, House File 3709, Perryman, Senate File 4171, Igo, Senate File 4760, Novotny, Senate File 2971, Olson, Senate File 3888, Cagle, and Senate File 1750, Bonner. I move the adoption of the calendar for the day pursuant to Rules 1.21 and 3.33. The Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will designate Thursday, April 30th for the adoption of the calendar for the day and establish a pre-filing requirement for amendments offered to those bills. Any discussion to the calendar for the day? Co-Chair Niska.
Thank you. Chair Long, I urge member support.
Any further discussion? I will note that the Senate File 4171 will be the Senate language, and Senate File 4760, we will be substituting the House language. Seeing no further discussion, I renew my motion. All those in favor of the calendar for the day, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The calendar for the day is adopted. Next on our agenda, members, we are going to be hearing informationally draft bill language from Representative Hollins, reviser number 2608426, which has been posted, which is a constitutional amendment for universal pretrial release, except in certain circumstances and elimination of cash bail. As I mentioned, this is an informational hearing only, and no action will be taken today on the bill. Representative Hollins, please present your bill when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Long, Chair Niska, and committee members. This is a constitutional amendment which advances a more just and equitable pretrial system in Minnesota by prioritizing fairness, public safety, and due process over a person's ability to pay. By eliminating monetary bail and establishing a presumption of pretrial release, this proposal ensures that individuals are not held in jail simply because of their financial circumstances, while still allowing courts to detain those who pose a clear and demonstrable risk to others or to the integrity of the judicial process. And I want to save most of my time for my four testifiers.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hollins. We have four individuals who will be presenting today. And first, I will invite Joshua Page up. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Joshua Page. Hello, members of the Rules and Legislative Administration Committee. Thank you to the co-chairs, Representative Long and Niska, for hearing our bill in your committee. My name is Joshua Page. I'm a professor of sociology, law, and public affairs at the University of Minnesota. I've spent the last 12 years studying bail and the pretrial system. I'm also a member of the Pretrial Justice Minnesota Coalition, which is the group bringing forward this bill. In 2023, the Minnesota legislature directed the MNJRC to study our state's pretrial system and produce recommendations for its improvement. I served as the co-lead of this study. We embarked on an 18-month research project to develop a proposal to transform Minnesota's pretrial system. Our team led more than a dozen community engagement sessions, spoke with hundreds of Minnesotans, interviewed 42 system actors in Minnesota, conducted site visits to other jurisdictions, spoke with pretrial experts across the country, reviewed the existing research literature on pretrial practices, conducted in-depth legal analysis, and analyzed data on Minnesota's pretrial system. We found that about 56% of people in Minnesota jails are held pretrial, and that Black and American Indian Minnesotans are vastly overrepresented in these populations. We also found that Greater Minnesota counties have the highest rates of pretrial detention. Because those detained pretrial experience worse outcomes, the current system has two tiers of justice, one for those with money and another for those without. This is consequential. Pretrial detention is deeply detrimental to individuals, families, and communities. Studies show that pretrial detention reduces community safety over the long run by jeopardizing access to housing, employment, and other resources. The system actors and community members we spoke with agree that Minnesota's pretrial system is not working as it should. Financial bail is not necessary. Research consistently finds that the imposition of monetary bail does not increase appearance rates or improve public safety. The research is also borne out by evidence from jurisdictions that have reduced or eliminated their reliance on financial bail. While pretrial detention can prevent criminal activity in the short term by incapacitating people accused of crimes, longer detention increases the likelihood that they will be charged with a new offense in the future. Researchers suggest that these long-term increases in criminal activity occur because pretrial detention disrupts or severs interpersonal relationships and community ties and results in decreased employment over time. Our recommendations take this into consideration in the new system we envision for Minnesota. Our report offers a blueprint for how Minnesota can transform the system so it maximizes safety, liberty, and equity. We are here today because that transformation cannot happen without a constitutional amendment. A pivotal part of our proposal is the creation of an intentional release and detention system. In this system, decisions to release or detain would be reasoned, justified, constitutionally sound, and not based on a person's wealth. Legislation creating the intentional release and detain system will be introduced next year for the legislature's consideration. And that is a necessary piece of the overall transformation we envision. Currently, Minnesota law does not allow for pretrial detention based on public safety or flight concerns. Instead, a person's ability to pay bail and or meet court-ordered conditions determines their release, unless they are released on their own recognizance. This is why, in order to create this new intentional release and detain system, we need to amend the Constitution. Your committee will hear more today about why this constitutional amendment is needed. Minnesota's pretrial system is not providing the community what it needs, and we heard this message loud and clear when talking with Minnesotans across the street. It is time for change. Thank you for your time, and I'll be available to answer questions at the end.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Alicia Grancy. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Alicia Grancy. Hello, members of the Rules and Legislative Administration and Committee. Thank you to the co-chairs, Representatives Long and Niska. My name is Alicia Granzi, and I am a staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota and a former public defender. The ACLU of Minnesota is an organization devoted to preserving the rights and liberties enshrined in our Constitution and laws. We are a member of the Pretrial Justice Coalition, and I am here to talk to you today about why we support the constitutional amendment to eliminate the exchange of money for freedom. Our legal system rests on two fundamental principles: that people are innocent until proven guilty, and that we all have the right to be treated equally under the law. In our cash bail system, those principles are not a reality. Most people who are sitting in jail in Minnesota have not been convicted of any crimes. They are sitting there simply because they don't have the money to pay for their freedom. The time has come to eliminate cash bail in Minnesota. Instead of relying on arbitrary amounts of money bail, judges should make an individualized determination that someone should be detained pretrial because there is evidence, actual evidence, that they pose a safety risk to others or are likely to flee. As a former public defender, I sat through countless bail hearings as they currently stand. These hearings typically lasted only a few minutes, with no real assessment of whether the person could safely be released or if their family could afford to pay a bail. Under this system, wealthy people can be released regardless of their potential threat to public safety or their likelihood to flee. Eliminating discriminatory cash bail allows judges to rely on evidence to assess an individual's circumstances and to meaningfully determine whether pretrial detention is truly required in the interest of public safety. This is the basic framework of the new intentional release and detain system that would be detailed in a separate bill. Cash bail is expensive to taxpayers and families and communities. The annual national cost of pretrial detention is $13.6 billion. We don't know a precise dollar amount in Minnesota because of the lack of clear data. What we do know is that we have to pay to house people in jail who could and should be out working and taking care of their families simply because they don't have access to bail money. And people lose jobs, lose their housing, and miss medical appointments simply because they don't have $1,000, sometimes as little as $78. Cash bail extracts an enormous sum from our communities. When courts set cash bail, people who can afford to pay the full amount are often forced to rely on for-profit bail companies to purchase their release. The individual pays a portion of the money up front in a non-refundable payment and agrees to a payment plan for the rest, which can include unreasonably high interest rates. These for-profit companies lobby against bail reform, not because they are concerned about public safety, but because they care about their bottom line. The for-profit industry makes about $2 billion every year from this exploitative system. There are plenty of other ways to ensure people stay on top of their court appearances without imposing unnecessary jail time that can derail the lives of people accused of crimes and the lives of their families. Next year, we will be introducing a comprehensive slate of bills that will address the ways we can ensure people do this and provide much-needed services that have been proven to be effective in keeping the community safe. This constitutional amendment is only a piece of that. And you may ask, again, why do we need a constitutional amendment? Minnesota's constitution, unlike the federal law, guarantees a right to bail. It says, all persons before conviction shall be bailable by sufficient sureties, except for capital offenses, when the proof is evident or the presumption great. And that's Minnesota Constitution Article 1, Section 7. Sureties, as we know, are generally related to a monetary interest or a property interest. Because capital offenses no longer exist in Minnesota, the Minnesota Supreme Court has determined that all crimes are bailable. In other words, bail is an absolute right in all cases. And that comes from a state court case, State v. Ledoux, in 2009. That means that no one in Minnesota can be preventatively detained pretrial if they can pay the money. In practice, this often means that people can only exercise their constitutional right to release if they can pay monetary bail or secure the services of a bail bond company. Minnesota's constitution, then, currently guarantees rights that would be at odds with the new intentional release and detention system that we propose to replace it, which Professor Page previously briefly introduced. These rights cannot be altered simply through statutory change. If Minnesota enacted statutory changes that negated the meaning of the Constitution's bail clause, that statute would likely face legal challenges. Implementing an intentional release and detention system, therefore, requires changing the Constitution. This constitutional amendment is just one piece of the larger transformation that is needed. We are looking forward to the continued dialogue at the Capitol in the coming years. The people of Minnesota deserve a better pretrial system. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Grancy. Next, we will hear from Jess Palian. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Jess Palliott, and I am the Policy Program Manager for Violence Free Minnesota. We are the statewide coalition to end relationship abuse, and we represent over 90 member programs providing direct services to victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence in every county in Minnesota. I am here today, or we are here today, to testify in favor of this constitutional amendment. I'm also a steering committee member of Pretrial Justice Minnesota, a broad nonpartisan coalition of advocacy organizations in Minnesota who hope to see a fairer, safer Minnesota for all who live here. There is a one-pager in your packet from Pretrial Justice Minnesota explaining who we are and what our vision is. Currently in Minnesota, every arrested person, as you've already heard, has a right to bail. This includes domestic abusers. Usually, that means that a person can pay a lower amount of bail and get released with conditions, or pay a higher amount of bail and get released with no conditions. This allows for people with access to cash to be released regardless of legitimate safety concerns that their victim might have. It's also not uncommon for victims to be, or domestic abuse survivors specifically, to feel pressure or coercion to pay the bail on behalf of the very person who hurt them. Domestic violence relationships are characterized by a high degree of control by the abuser over the victim, where the abuser uses physical, psychological, and emotional violence, as well as financial violence, to compel a survivor's compliance with their demands. If a survivor doesn't pay the bail for their abuser, then they often face implicit or explicit threats of further violence. I want to highlight also in your packet, there is a letter from the Advocates for Human Rights. They have been watching court hearings about domestic and sexual violence for a long time, but they highlighted a few of the numbers from the last few years. Over 800 hearings that they watched in the last year have been first appearances or arraignment hearings where bail and conditions of release were discussed in domestic and sexual violence cases. Observer data gathered during those first appearances show how that system lacks substantive assessment of somebody's safety needs. Over 75% of those hearings for bail lasted less than 10 minutes. Many lasted under 5. Victim input regarding their own safety was raised in less than 15% of those hearings. The current bail system is failing survivors by not taking their holistic safety needs into account. For domestic violence victims, this amendment is about ensuring that a public safety decision is made using public safety factors and not based on access to cash. We want to draw special attention to the language in the amendment, or in the bill before you, about orders for protection and domestic abuse no contact orders and other similar orders from around the country. This language ensures that where a victim has self-advocated through the civil restraining order process for their own safety, the court will recognize that and take it seriously. One shortcoming of our current pretrial system is a case that type that we see in the domestic violence world, which is referred to as intimate partner homicide-suicide, otherwise known as murder-suicide. We had 11 murder-suicides in Minnesota just in 2025. Not counting the abusers, we lost 12 people to those murder-suicides. The dark reality is that a person who plans on ending their own life and their victim's life is not going to be motivated by a cash amount or a condition amount. We also know that while homicide risk for survivors of domestic violence is never zero, the level of risk that they are exposed to tends to go down over time of separation. A system that has an intentional and specific focus on the public safety risk of an arrested person, rather than looking at their safety through a cash lens, is more likely to be able to handle these cases thoroughly and thoughtfully. One final aspect of this that is also touched on in the Advocates for Human Rights letter that will help survivors of violence is this. Survivors of relationship abuse are almost always financially abused by their partners. Bank accounts are drained, cash is withheld, and money-making decisions are taken away from the survivor. On top of that, survivors of relationship abuse are increasingly likely to struggle with addiction and mental health issues in response to the trauma they've been exposed to. That makes it more likely that they will commit low-level, nonviolent offenses. This intersection, survivors having mental health and addiction issues and not having access to their own cash, means that the cash bail system can have a double harm on those survivors. It's a challenge and a safety issue for them. For every day that a survivor is spending in jail, they are not earning the income they need to be financially independent. And if they have shared children with their abuser, the sole caretaker for that child is going to be the abuser. This is not a rare issue for our member programs. We surveyed them in 2022, and 89% of advocates responding to the survey had worked with at least one client who had been criminalized in connection to their experience of abuse. And everything that you heard from our last two testifiers about racial disparities, about how often people are being put in jail, applies to survivors as a subpopulation as well. So chair and members, I wanna thank you for taking the time to listen to this important issue. This proposed amendment would help us reach a safer, fairer Minnesota where public safety decisions are made on public safety factors. Please help us create a violence-free Minnesota.
Thank you so much. Our final testimony will be from Ramsey County Attorney John Choi.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Choi, and I serve as the Ramsey County Attorney. It's a real pleasure to be here today with all of you, and I want to thank you for taking the time to give committee time to this really important issue. I think over the years, this legislature has invested in more study of our pretrial system, and I think there's a number of recommendations that have come forward. And I think one of the things that I think is really critical, and I can tell you this because as the chief prosecutor of Ramsey County, I am the person that usually gets blamed when somebody gets released from jail. This is pretrial. This is pre-conviction. So when they haven't been convicted of anything, and something goes wrong. And invariably, you know, somebody will call the office or they want to know a little bit more. But I'll tell you that I would be a rich person for all the times when somebody would call and complain about somebody, like they read something about in the paper and they said, why were they out? And they were out because the cash bail system that we have in Minnesota allows them to be. And when we had that case before us, the issue that was on the table is just what is the appropriate amount? And what should be on the table, as was said before, it should be, we should be talking and arguing about the public safety factors about and what is it this person needs to make sure that they return to court or whatever those factors might be. Those are the things that we should be talking about and deciding upon during the pretrial process. And this moving away from the cash bail system into one in which that it assesses risk, it looks at safety, and ensures that there's fairness in the system is the right approach. And then on the other side of it, I also get blamed for situations where somebody is poor and they're sitting in jail, and then you realize they probably shouldn't be there because of the underlying offense is so low. The United States Supreme Court and our laws in the state of Minnesota make it absolutely clear that the only things that we should be thinking about in terms of pretrial release are two things. One is public safety, and the second thing is whether or not they're going to return to court. Those are the only two things that we should be thinking about. But I think as a part of that process and the system that you can devise with this constitutional amendment, assuming the constitutional amendment would pass, this legislature, all of you, and I hope this would be bipartisan because truly – this is a bipartisan issue. We're talking about issues of liberty, freedom, we're talking about justice. All of those things are not partisan issues. You get to decide what those details are, working with Representative Hollins. And I'm sure that Representative Hollins will be reaching out to the other side of the aisle to come up with a better system. We can, I think, do better in this state, and we have a tradition and a history here in the state of Minnesota, I think, of having a very forward-thinking system of justice and how we get to public safety. So I urge your support of, at some point in the future, this constitutional amendment so that the voters can decide. And then I urge your curiosity and just due diligence on working together as a legislature to come up with something better that isn't focused on how much money you have or the equation of money to guide our pretrial decisions. It should, again, it should be focused around public safety, whether that person is going to return to court. And then I also think if we allow for more vigorous arguments and debate before the judge about what should happen, I think we're going to dig into some of the mental health issues that I see all the time and the drug addiction issues that I see all the time with many of the individuals that come before the criminal court. So thanks so much for your willingness to consider this bill and be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I have a question for you, County Attorney Choi, if you could stay where you are. Well, first, I just wanted to thank Vice Chair Hollins for bringing this forward and thank the Pretrial Coalition for all their work. I know this is the start of a continuing conversation. I know there's been other work this session in the pretrial space as well. We have seen bipartisan support for moving towards a risk-based system around the country. Saw a bipartisan bill pass in New Jersey. Met with a couple representatives from Utah who, because of the domestic violence concerns, moved away from a system that is based on ability to pay and towards one that's based on risk and public safety. And you mentioned, County Attorney Choi, that there are circumstances that you've faced in your office where individuals who you would have seen as a potential public safety risk were released. I was curious if you have any examples that come to mind for you where there's somebody who you would have thought, or the judge perhaps would have wanted, to hold pretrial, but were unable to because of the cash bail system.
Yeah, and Chairman Long and members of the committee, I don't have those with me today, but I can certainly provide them to you because during the pandemic period, we got a lot of those phone calls. In fact, there was one moment in time where the police chief of St. Paul, chief at that time, was Chief Todd Axtell, and he was getting a lot of pressure about just all of the bad things that were happening in our community. And by the way, during that time period, during the pandemic, you know, we were at our worst at responding to crime, and I think a lot of it was, you know, this blame that was happening, the blame game. Everybody was kind of blaming each other, and we weren't really listening, and we weren't thinking about what we needed to do for the people. And so I remember my good friend, Chief Todd Axtell, went up to the City Council in St. Paul, and they had lots of questions for him about all these things. And he brought up, it's probably one of those three cases, but he brought up three examples, right, of things where he thought, like, we did everything that we needed to do. We investigated the case, and these were serious violent crimes. And we presented them to the county attorney. The county attorney charged them, but they were released. And then he kind of left it at my front doorstep to explain I wasn't there in the room. But then I talked with the chief after that. I said, I wish you would have told me about that. But then we looked deeper into the cases. But what we found was at least one of, for a fact, that one of them was released because they posted the money. In fact, it might have even been another party organization that did that. And then the other two, and this is another bigger question, too, that I hope that all of you are thinking about. And I know that some of you have been involved with passing legislation to create a better framework of how we deal with people with mental illness. But the other two were people that were released because after numerous attempts to evaluate them about their competency, they were ruled incompetent to stand trial, which means that they can't adequately participate in their own defense. And so by law and by constitutional principles, we can't prosecute them any longer once the judge says that this person is incompetent to stand trial. So the right thing to do is to eliminate the criminal proceeding. And then if there is no other alternative to send them to, they have to be released. They can't be in jail. And those were the other two situations. But it was through those conversations that we came together with just a little bit more curiosity and a little bit more want of trying to come to solutions. And I think we're a better system for that, of having some of those hard conversations. But I really think that these scenarios that I just explained to you are playing out all across the state of Minnesota. And so what we need to do is come together and figure out ways to have a better system of evaluating risk and public safety. What do we need to do at the front end of a case? Because we can't just put somebody in jail or prison just because we feel like it. We can't put them there just because we think that they're guilty. They have to be guilty. And the reality is that all across the state, it takes some level of time to get to the adjudication or the plea negotiation or the trial.
Coach Arniska.
Thank you, Chair Long. And appreciate your testimony, County Attorney Choi, especially about the situations in which somebody, maybe a judge would evaluating these public safety factors would say there really is no amount of bail that should allow this person out. And appreciate you, Representative Hollins, for bringing forward such a tough on crime constitutional amendment maybe in those circumstances. The concern I have with this constitutional amendment, the way it's written, is that it doesn't just put these public safety factors in for those types of cases. It eliminates a tool to secure the release of, you know, there obviously there are some cases where we would never let somebody out no matter what, or we'd want the judge to hold somebody no matter what. And there are there's a segment of cases where we would say, yeah, we don't have any reason to believe this person's not going to show up for trial. And then there's the wide swath of cases in the middle. And why wouldn't we use some monetary security? Why shouldn't the judge be able to use that as a tool to secure release? Because the concern I have with this is that it eliminates that as a tool entirely for that broad swath of cases in the middle.
Looks like County Attorney Troy wanted to take a crack.
Chairman Long and Representative Niska, thank you for that question, because I was actually having that exact same thought last night as I was reading the bill. But I trust that all of you, as legislators who would come up with working with Representative Hollins, would make sure that it's not just two decisions. It's not an or decision. There's something in the middle, in between. So one of the things of what we have in our system, too, is we have this system of conditional release, meaning that the judge can release them, but then take appropriate measures to put in place a number of things that would protect that maybe that person or the public and especially the victim, right? So I think what you're getting at is I think what you're seeing in the language of this bill is that it seems like it sets it up for one or the other. It's like release or argue that they stay in custody. I also think there's probably something in between, and I think the intention, I would hope, would be that the legislation, the underlying legislation, would make that clear. And like I had mentioned before, I think that moment of like decision making about whether that person remains in custody or is not in custody, it's also a really perfect time to evaluate some of the other reasons of justice involvement. So like the mental health issues or the drug addiction issues. And I think that's where I think between the adverse parties, the prosecution and the defense, they could work on maybe some plans to address those things. I find that when people who are in the justice system and they're doing the things that they need to do, when they start doing that, like for instance taking medication or for instance addressing the addiction issues that might be present, that things will improve. And so I think I'm answering your question by just agreeing with that there needs to be more clarity about that. But I really think that the way that this is set up is this is the constitutional amendment, and then there would be legislation that underline that to fulfill that, and all of you would get to decide that.
Looks like Mr. Page might want to chime in.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the question. It's a great question. I would respond in two ways. One is how Mr. Choi responded, which is that this is not a detainer or release. It means that detention is now an option, but in many cases there would be conditional release. And we know the research shows that there are things that make it much more likely that people will return. Court notifications, calls by pretrial services, putting people in giving them access to all kinds of services, which is what's happening in New Jersey and New York and Illinois. The other thing is there's absolutely no evidence that money motivates people to come back. It's assumed, but there's actually no social science, no evidence that actually shows that, right? And what we know is that there are comparisons that show states that have cash bail versus those that don't use it have very similar rates of return, right? The fact of the matter is 90% of people return to court in any kind of system. And so there is, but the thing is, once you then allow that to be an option, that also means that we're going to be in this in the situation we are in now, where people then, you know, even if it's a low amount of bail, won't be able to bail out. And they're not just not able to bail out because they can't pay. Is when you go to a bail bond company, you have to come up with a 10% premium. You also have to come up with co-signers. It's like co-signing a loan. And there are many people that actually, over time, can bring together the amount of money they need to pay the 10% premium. But they don't actually have co-signers because in poor people's networks, the research shows, are other poor people. And I will also, one thing I want to point out is when we're talking about a cash bail system, the people who pay cash bail are not defendants. They are the family members of them, and they are disproportionately low-income women of color. It's those who are the people that are losing money. They are not being able to pay for their medical bills. Those are the people that we're really talking about, where this money is coming from. So I think there's three things. One, there's no evidence that giving people cash bail actually motivates them to come to court. It may be, but we have no evidence of that. Second is that there are better ways to do it, and the research shows that. And third, assigning cash bail actually is shown to be quite harmful, not just to defendants, but to their family members and communities.
Follow-up, Coach Onyeska?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Long, and appreciate those, especially that second, maybe more candid answer. I, as someone who's sort of observed criminal justice in the state of Minnesota, that piece of it feels like a little bit of a bait and switch to me. The idea that we're emphasizing the ability to hold in custody maybe some people who theoretically will be held in custody who are dangers, while also taking away what I think the evidence does show is an important tool. If you look at the failure to appear rates for those who do have commercial bail versus those who are on unsecured release, whether you're looking at local statistics, and I'm sure at some point we'll have a more full discussion about the empirical evidence of that one way or the other. It feels like this is being presented as if we are creating the ability to hold violent criminals, which perhaps that piece of it would be a good change to our Constitution, but taking away an important tool to deal with. I appreciate that there are some other tools that courts could use, but having some sort of financial skin in the game for that person to show up, and that can be calibrated for a particular defendant to go to their particular situation, what's necessary to incentivize them to show up. I think it would be a huge mistake, especially in light of the catch and release types of issues that you, County Attorney Choi, are hearing the complaints about. Frankly, I think some of the complaints to you are probably more justified than how you feel, but I understand that it's part of a bigger systemic problem. And it is a systemic problem within our system. People are arrested, released, commit crimes while they're on release in Minnesota at rates that are way too high. And frankly, I think this constitutional amendment, as it's written, is a step in the wrong direction overall. I think it does have some merit. The idea of public safety factors being used for public safety decisions, that has some merit. If we do need to tweak that language in the Constitution, maybe that has some merit. I think the prohibition on monetary bail is a mistake.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll give an example in the fairly recent past. There was an individual from my community, and very well known that he had suffered from mental issues, and he was arrested for some property damage. And the Freedom Fund bailed him out. And he was later picked up at the airport, Manassas-St. Paul Airport, and he caused all kinds of property damage, was throwing things around while people were coming and going to the airport. So the reason I bring that up, it is not just the cash bail piece, but in this scenario, for it to work, these people have to have a place to go. You can't just release them out into the general public where they're going to continue to play out, you know, probably their mental illness and cause harm to others. And right now, even though we have some places for these people to go, there's a shortage. And so what do we do with those people where we don't have a place to put them? We cannot just let them back out where they can cause more harm. And so if there's a solution to that, and I know it's more money, we have a shortage of people even going into the field of helping those sorts of folks. And so my concern in this, one of my concerns in this, is that there's just nowhere for them to go if they're released.
Looked like Mr. Pallion wanted to respond.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for that question. It is true that we have a shortage of places for people to go. Part of the long-term vision of this, of the Pretrial Justice Minnesota folks, is a robust pretrial services arm to make sure that those people who have special challenges are going to be able to have those challenges addressed by dedicated services organizations. We do know that jails, by and large, are not a place for people who are suffering from mental health or addiction issues. They're not getting better during their time in jail. And so we are trying to make sure that, yes, those people do get the services that they need to be successful in community. And there is some evidence from some other states that have set up an intentional release and detain system that people who engage in voluntary services have a much better success rate at not ending up back in the court system. And so we are hoping in future packages to make sure that's a core part of this, because we want people to succeed. We don't want people to get out and simply do the same behaviors that led to the underlying criminality again. I just want to also note that in a lot of these cases where people are getting out, they're getting out under the current system. And under that current system, that pretrial decision might have been made in 5 or 10 minutes. It might have been made on a cash amount, and then they somehow got access to that cash and got out immediately, no matter how that decision was made. Under the system we're hoping to implement here, there would be a considered, actually in-depth hearing where we might start to realize some of these mental health issues. We might start to realize some of these substance use issues, and we can then introduce those people to the resources that do exist. Because we have identified them at that first hearing. You know, at a pretrial hearing that might only be 5 minutes long, the judge, the probation agent, supervision might never even hear about those underlying issues. They might just hear that there was property damage, right? And so we're hoping that this more developed system is something that helps identify those issues so that they can actually be addressed with specificity, as opposed to right now we're trying to put a cash number onto an issue that is more nuanced than a cash number. And that ends up actually leaving out a lot of that nuance on those people who have challenges like mental health issues or substance use issues or trauma issues or simple decision-making issues that they might need support on.
Representative Scott, follow up.
Yes, thank you. So from my perspective, I would not be comfortable with something like this becoming law until we have a place for sure for those people to go. I just, in the interest of public safety and for their own good, unless there's a place for them to get the help that they need and it's monitored, why in the world would we move to something like this and let these folks, and I understand some of them are getting out now. I get that. But I think this would open the floodgates more. And I believe that we should not get the cart before the horse. And we need to have the services in place and have a level of confidence in those services, that the people are going to get the services they need before we make a huge sweeping change. Thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, I think this kind of highlights something that's been bothering me for a while, and that's the privatization of the systems. And so we know that bail systems are privatized, and so people are being charged literally to remain free even though they're presumed innocent. You know, and that the profit depends on keeping cash bail in place. And so folks are, you know, the industry business model only works if we have judges setting bail. And so, you know, I think when we look at this stuff, we really have to look at how the profit incentives are shaping our public policy. And if the goal is to drain wealth from people, then we're accomplishing it. If the goal is to actually reform people and get them the assistance they need so that they can become taxpaying, law-abiding, productive members of our society, then we need to treat it that way and stop a system that's just exploiting them for their whatever little wealth they have.
Any further questions? Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins, and all of your testifiers for bringing forward. I'm glad this is an informational hearing. I think there does need to be some work done on the overall language, but I think sort of more specifically to what we're talking about here, I think we all recognize that mental illness is not just generally a huge issue, but particularly when it comes to criminal justice, a significant contributor. And I think we just sort of need to state publicly that the solution to folks having issues with mental illness is not just to leave them in jail. That is not how we solve this crisis. So Representative Scott, I agree, and I hope we can have a conversation about making sure that the resources are there to support folks who suffer from mental illness because of the broader costs that we know exist within our society. And I think really what this discussion has highlighted for me is a dynamic that I think we're seeing play out in so many different places these days, and that is the power and privilege that comes to folks who have easy access to money, in particular a lot of money, and how expensive it is to be poor. And so I do hope that this conversation continues, and I think there is a space, I noticed there's not, for example, any enabling language within this bill, which is a common feature of constitutional amendments as well. So, you know, there is a space for that statutory piece that I think can address the concerns. But I think we just need to focus on the real thing here, which is that folks who are involved in the criminal justice system don't deserve to be in jail just because they're poor.
County Attorney Choi.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to Representative Coulter and also Representative Scott. I think that both of you are talking about the same thing, and this legislature actually put into place a framework, I think about 3 or 4 years ago. It authorizes these ERTS facilities that we can use as a part of the underlying criminal proceeding. What's necessary there, though, is just some more, maybe some financial incentive or some way to some funding to get these going at the local level. Because I do really think that at the moment where we're talking about some of the pretrial custody issues, and there isn't the ability to reasonably set a bail that keeps that person in custody, and it's not the appropriate thing to do legally, we need more options. And so this legislature actually listened, and they created some things around mental health, because that drives a lot of it, to allow for the criminal court to be able to refer people to places where they can actually get better, as opposed to having that Hobson's that tough choice about keeping them in jail. Believe me, if they remain in jail, they deteriorate, and they actually get worse, and it's not good for public safety, and it's also not good for human rights. But there's a way that I think if we were to fund that law, that you know, that appropriation that went into effect a long time ago more fully for the entire state, I think that could really enhance this effort to get a better pretrial system for all Minnesotans.
Well, thank you all. I haven't seen further hands, and so I'll just give Vice Chair Hollins the last word. But before I do, I'll just appreciate the discussion today. And it does sound like there is some common ground, I think, from the comments we've heard today about the need to look at risk and public safety in terms of how we're assessing pretrial. And then also trying to find alternatives for folks that are not just jail. We know that the current system right now, people can get released if they post bail. And so we should be able to try to find a system that is more risk-based. And I appreciate what County Attorney Choi said, that we should be looking at two factors, at risk and whether they're going to return. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I also just think it is fundamentally unfair and frankly un-American that we are determining liberty based on wealth. And that doesn't seem to me like a system we should perpetuate. Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for the conversation. Thank you to my testifiers. I will say, for too long, people with wealth have been able to leverage cash bail to be able to buy their freedom. And I heard financial skin in the game, if they have financial skin in the game. I'll give a couple of high-profile examples. Michael Jackson posted cash bail, right? And he had financial skin in the game that did not stop him from continuing to molest children. Jeffrey Epstein posted cash bail after soliciting a prostitute. Think about what we could have done if he had stayed in jail. We could have prevented further harm from people that happened during that time. Furthermore, jailing people for minor nonviolent infractions wastes tax dollars on people who aren't a risk to public safety. And it also has collateral costs. When you jail a person who is the primary breadwinner for a family, that means there's a ripple effect to our communities. And that doesn't just affect that family. Those families might now be applying for food stamps, for childcare assistance, for a whole number of different things, because the person who is usually providing for them is now jailed before even being proven guilty. So I truly believe that placing this amendment before voters and letting voters have a chance to voice their opinion on this means that Minnesota would have an opportunity to modernize its justice system in a way that's both fair and effective. This proposal really protects public safety, and I appreciate Representative Cherniska saying this, that this is a tough on crime aspect, because this means that you can't buy your way out of risk, right? You can't buy your way. If you're high risk, you can't buy your way out to freedom. And I think that's really important. It also upholds constitutional principles and affirms that liberty before trial should not depend on your wealth. It's a balanced approach that strengthens trust in our legal system while assuring accountability is truly where it is needed. So thank you so much for the opportunity to present this.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hollins. Thank you for the testifiers. That's our business members, and we are adjourned.